back.
It's Steph.
And Carrie.
And we're here with our good friend, Robert Newsom. Thank you for joining us, Robert.
I'm excited to be here.
Appreciate you. This is our second episode of the year. It's already 50% more, 100% more than you got last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take it. I just wanted to do a quick introduction of Robert. So I think I first met you because you run Fluke, the zine festival in Athens, which is my favorite thing in Athens.
Aww.
He also does a monthly screening at Flickr, 3-Star Cinema, which everyone should check out, and which definitely features Hong Kong movies I would not have seen without Robert. I think, was it The Peacock King?
Yeah, The Peacock King.
That one blew my mind.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I'm writing it down right now.
And I've recently learned that Robert went to a screening of House of 1,000 Corpses, and he brought a clicker with him to keep track of how many corpses, and they fall way short of 1,000.
There's a scene in House of 1,000 Corpses where they're in a cavern or something, and there's a lot of corpses. And so you have to be fair to Rob Zombie and mm-hmm. give him credit for those corpses. But even if there were 500 corpses in that space, by my count, Rob Zombie still owes me about 400 and something corpses.
I like that you're keeping him honest, though. Mm-hmm. It's important in this day and age.
It's just numbers matter, Rob.
Yeah, I'm with it. So, yeah, so again, thanks for being here. And you are, I think Hong Kong horror is one of your specialties, right? It's one of your personal favorite genres. Is that, would that be fair?
I mean, I definitely watch a lot of movies from Hong Kong, you know, pre-handover Hong Kong movies. And I'm not an expert. It's just a thing I like. The horror movies, and we will probably get into it a little deeper, but Mr. Vampire was my own introduction to that. There's a story that I've written before. I think it's even in a Letterboxd review, where I used to rent movies from Video Library.
Oh, I remember.
And I loved it. That's where I met Klon.
It's sad. I never got to go.
And there was a guy that worked at Video Library named Alan. And Alan would just sort of sit there and watch me rent all the John Woo movies, everything with Gordon Liu, all the Shaw Brothers Kung Fu movies. You know, he kind of got to know that's what I was renting at the time. And this was in VHS times. And Alan one day said, "Hey, do you like hopping vampire movies?" I didn't know what he was talking about. But you have to act like you're cool, right? I'm like, well, yeah. And I don't remember what I said, but I tried to, you know, retain a level of, no, I know about this stuff too. I'm also a cool guy. The end result was that Alan let me rent the VHS of Mr. Vampire that Video Library had just gotten. And I loved it instantly. It was and still is. I mean, it's a perfect film. I love everything about it. It was the first movie that I borrowed someone's VCR so I could chain two VCRs together to make a copy of.
Yes.
I still have that copy in my attic somewhere. I'm sure it is mostly a pile of dust now, but that tape has stayed with me ever since I pirated it from Video Library. So I think the statute of limitations is up on that one. But yeah, I totally stole that movie.
That's awesome.
What a wonderful place. I think anyone who lived here during that time discovered so many classic foreign cult movies just by being there. Just sometimes I'd be there just listening. Mm-hmm. I'd hear people at the front counter, and I'm sort of like, you know, ear to the wall, like, oh, what are they talking about? I want to see what they're talking about. You know, I mean, it's that kind of place. Like every person who came in there, you discover a gem through them.
And their way of shelving movies was so maddening. In retrospect, it made you discover stuff that you had never heard of before. But if you wanted to rent, say, Blade Runner, it's not under B.
Mm-mm.
There's no science fiction section. All the movies are organized by director. So you mm-hmm. have to know who directed it, except certain things. Like there was a whole French New Wave cinema section.
There were genre sections as well.
There were also director, but it wasn't like, oh, here's all the action movies. It's like, well, if you want an action movie, it might be here. But if they had enough John Woo movies, then John Woo had his own section. So you had to go there to get it. Really maddening. But like I said, in retrospect, there's a lot of things I discovered that I like and didn't like, but never would have watched had it not been forced upon me to dig through everything else to find what I was trying to get to.
The golden age of video rental.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I would split time. There was a place near Techwood, or in Techwood, right near Georgia Tech, where we would go to get Jackie Chan flicks. Because sometimes he couldn't even find him at video library.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time where, so we'd drive up there. We'd drive the, you know, the hour and change, go there, rent them, spend a couple days here, and drive all the way back. I mean, we were that rabid about finding movies in that genre. I was getting into kind of, you know, Hong Kong action, martial arts, all that kind of stuff. And so, but then there was also video library. And so we kind of, you know, whatever we could find in whichever place, we would just drive around to wherever we could find it. Because really, that was the only way to find it at that time.
Once DVDs started happening, there were a couple of places on Buford Highway. One of them was over by Harmony Vegetarian, where the Vietnamese supermarket was. It's closed down now. That had just burned DVDs, which I think it's the first place where I actually saw home burned DVDs. Like, I didn't know you could do that. I thought you had to have a factory to make them. This was, you know, right when DVDs first, like, popped up.
Yes.
And there were all of these Chinese films that I'd never heard of, and I would just flip through looking at the covers thinking, oh, this might be good. None of them are subtitled in English. I do not know Chinese, Mandarin, Cantonese, nothing. I don't know it. So I would just wade through these movies. I saw a lot of stuff that I still couldn't tell you what I saw. Because I would just go in there and grab three or four of them and pay, I think it was like $20 for three or something. I don't remember. It's really cheap because they were burning them in the back, you know? Yeah. And awesome. So I would just, I would grab stuff that had a decent looking cover. Still don't know what I watched.
Right.
If I ever see it again, it might like tap into a memory, but I don't know. I think you and I were talking about all the recent reissues, especially of martial arts movies. And
it's amazing.
There is stuff that I rented from Video Library, you know, Five Deadly Venoms and stuff like that, that I'm like, what was the one? House of Traps is one that was recently reissued. I think it's on one of the Shout box sets.
Okay.
And I was like, I've never seen House of Traps before. And I'm sitting there, and 20 minutes into it, I'm like, I have seen this movie before. And it was because I'd rented it from Video Library, and I just didn't remember. Because, you know, there's no letterbox. I'm not writing stuff down. Mm-hmm. So no. I know that I've seen these things before, but there's nothing that's triggered the memory. Just like with House of Traps, I'm going to be watching something one day and go, that's what this was. I have seen this before. So
that's a good feeling.
It's a great time to just to be a fan of these films and see them all come back around. Now they look great. I mean, they're just, we were going to watch, we didn't care how grainy they were. We just wanted to watch them now. They're just this beautiful 4K transfers and get all these special extras. We're talking about Eureka, some of these these companies that are really specializing in this, you know, to some degree, Shout, but, you know, 88 films, some of the other ones we talked about. But yeah, it's kind of fun. I'm kind of rediscovering a lot of these films now.
A lot of them look too good. Because, because you can see the filmmakers are like, nobody's ever going to notice that we just painted a wall of the studio blue.
Right.
But on these 4K transfers, you can see a door that they just painted over, and they painted a cloud over this, but you can see the door in the wall. You're not supposed to see that.
Right,
so I kind of wish there was a way to maybe downgrade it a little bit.
Right.
But
there should be an option. Yeah. Let me un-HD it.
Well, sometimes I go with the Blu-ray over the 4K if I feel like that might be an issue, because, you know, we won't quite get that degree with the Blu-ray. But yeah, no, it's not a bad point.
Well, we're going to jump into these movies, but I wanted to quickly breeze through some recently watched.
Yeah, so what you got, Steph? What are some that you watched recently?
I haven't watched anything, like, super cool that I'd highly recommend, but I have been catching up on 2023 stuff, so I'm just quickly going to say I watched The Blackening, I watched Thanksgiving, and I watched Leave the World Behind.
Ooh, three that I really enjoyed, varying degrees, but yeah, absolutely, from last year.
I think The Blackening was the best of the three. Thanksgiving was really awesome, and I love Gina Gershon, and I did not think Leave the World Behind was a good movie, but it is a good apocalypse concept, because whenever I think about the world ending, whether it be zombies, virus, alien invasion, the earth is just dying, I hope to be immediately deceased. But in this one, I actually think it rewards people for having physical media, and I think I would hang out until my teeth started falling out, because that happens. But I have so many books and movies I'd love to catch up on. They still have electricity.
Oh, well then, that makes it better. Yeah. Slightly.
You catch up on everything. Literally, you would catch up on everything.
All right. Robert.
So I've been hanging out with my mom a lot. She had surgery and she can't walk. She will later, but she's off her feet for now. So I've been helping her out at her house in Perry, Georgia. And so I've been going through a lot of mom appropriate stuff, a lot of 50s, 40s and 50s movies, just because those are fun to sort of put on for a while. But I watched Fritz Lang's Human Desire.
I've actually never seen it.
It's so good. The way he films it, the whole place takes, all the characters work for a railroad. So there's an engineer, there's a yard master, an assistant yard master, all these people. And the way he films these trains is just, I mean, it's amazing. And Fritz Lang is a good director. We know that. Yeah. But the way he puts these trains on film and the way, and this is such a cliche to say, but the way the black and white filmmaking and the, his use of light and shadow in this, and the stories, I mean, it's a tight story. It's good. Human Desire, Fritz Lang. I'm late to the party on this one. It's from 1954, so it's been around for a while. But I'm finally, after what is that, 60 years, I'm finally catching up on it.
So, I don't know enough about or 70 cinema years, yeah. at all.
I don't either. I just like click through. And what's great is if you watch it on Tubi, as soon as it ends, just like YouTube, another one starts playing. So you can just sit there all day and go through it.
Tubi's got a surprisingly good selection of classic and cult films.
Seventh Curse
continually,
is on there.
I know. I'm continually surprised. That is where I watched it the other night.
And before that, I went to the movies and I saw Monkey Man.
How was it?
Terrible.
Oh. And you went on your birthday.
I did. I went on my birthday.
Now, question. Are you a fan sometimes of the John Wickian action movies?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Okay, I maybe...
Just to give context, what you would you like other movies in that genre? Yeah.
I love the John Wick movies. I really do. Great. The fourth one maybe lost me a little bit, but I still liked it. Maybe Monkey Man wasn't terrible, but I think the way Dev Patel puts action on screen is kind of a disservice to the stunt performers because it's filmed and presented in such a way that it's really jumpy, a lot of handheld cameras, a lot of breaking of the 180-degree rule. It's hard to sort of place bodies in this space. A lot of really tight close-up shots during the action. And I guess I understand. I mean, I don't claim to understand what he was trying to do, but it felt like he was trying to try something new. And there's no shame in that. I don't think it worked. It didn't work for me. A lot of people love this movie. A lot of people I know thought this movie was great, but I really, it was not for me. There's one shot near the end of the film in the sort of final fight where it's in a restaurant and Dev Patel's character is standing on a bar and these people are trying to jump on the bar and fight him. And there's one shot that only lasts for less than 10 seconds. And it's so clear and concise and well-framed and just a perfectly shot piece of action. And those 10 seconds made me wish the rest of the movie were done completely differently. It's almost like he was showing his hand a little bit like, hey, I can do this. But I chose to make a mess over here for you to sort through. And I don't know. It felt kind of flat to me. I wasn't a fan.
That's a shame. I think I probably will still watch it at some point, but
it's probably worth seeing.
It's on my radar. I do want to see it. You know, I'm interested to see what he does as a, you know, first-time director. I always like that. But I don't know how high my hopes are. I'm kind of going in sort of with kind of measured expectations. I saw Civil War.
You did! Finally, somebody! Alex Garland, has he pulled through?
Well, you know, I love Ex Machina. I mean, what a debut as director.
Yeah, and all of his screenplays before that.
I thought it was great. I thought Annihilation was great. Civil War is a really well-filmed movie. Aside from a couple curious moments, particularly near the end, where they were, I don't know what he was trying to do. I'm not 100% sure, but I didn't love it. Civil War has a lot of great parts. I think because it's about photojournalists, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of shots of them getting the perfect shot as they go through all these areas of the country. It made me, I kind of felt a little cold. I didn't really get in the characters much. I think I wanted to get into them a little bit more. I thought Kirsten Dunst is great. The acting's great. And maybe that was his point. He wants you to feel like you're on the outside. But it just, I don't know, it felt like a mishmash of multiple movies kind of thrown into one. you know, I love cinema. I love championing cinema. But I almost feel like Civil War had been better as like a micro series, like a four to six part miniseries.
Yeah, but then I definitely wouldn't make it through.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I just, you know, and again, I want art made for the big screen. But I don't know. For this one, I just had some issues. Yeah. That being said, there's some great scenes. Jesse Plemons is terrifying.
I love Jesse Plemons. She's a wonderful actor. I don't really want to see him as a scary dude, though. I like when he's kind of like a pathetic, sad sack.
No, he's not a good guy. Not a good guy. Not the guy you ever want to like meet as you're driving through the country. You don't want to come across him. So yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings about it, but I only saw it on Tuesday, so I'm still processing kind of the way I feel about that. You know, I would say go check it out. I think there's good food for thought in it. And then the other one I saw most recently, I feel like a lot of big movies recently, is Doom Part 2, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Me too.
I mean, visually, you know, I don't know if it gets much better than that in cinema, as far as just the grand scope, the David Lean kind of scope that the Dune series has. I think that Denis Villeneuve is probably one of the best directors in cinema right now.
Oranges.
He's right up there. I mean, he's right there. So I think I enjoyed the first Dune a little bit better. I like the first installment of a film where you really are building the world. But God, I mean, I really can't argue with much in it.
I thought it was awesome. And it forced me to finally just sludge through that first Dune book. I quit it like five times.
You can see it over there. I've got the first Dune book right by the plant over there.
I think I read it when I was 16 or 17, and I don't know if I finished it then, and I have really leaned into it a few times since then. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the time I'm going to do it, and I'll get 70 or 80 pages in and realize I don't have to do this.
You don't have to do it.
So I'll just stop. So I have a copy at home where the first, you know, 80 pages or so is like really well worn, but everything after that is still a solid block.
Well, that's where I was at, and finally the time was right. I think it was because I was sick and I couldn't leave my sofa.
That's fair.
Robert, do you have one more?
I watched Dark Heritage, which was, I don't know if it's shot on film or shot on video, but it's a adaptation of Lovecraft's Lurking Fear, which apparently has been adapted 4 times. For screen.
What are the other ones?
I don't know. I mean, they're all called Lurking Fear.
I don't even know why I'm asking. I'm actually very Lovecraft ignorant too.
It's, in my opinion, it's, speaking of Frank Herbert, it's one of Lovecraft's more boring stories. And I think the adaptation, it's a spooky old house story. You know, there's a spooky old house and there's something in there. What is it? We don't know. It's monsters. But It's been adapted 4 times. I've never seen any of these adaptations. And Lurking Fear, I think it was another Tubi one.
When did it come out?
89.
I'm sorry, Dark Heritage was 89. Lurking Fear is what the rest of them are called. That's the name of the original story.
Okay.
But yeah, was it on Tubi? I think it might have been on Tubi. I don't know. But yeah, I watched that and it was fine. It was filmed in Louisiana. And so, you know, a lot of great regional actors with very thick Southern accents. A lot of people who were not professional actors chipping in. I always like that. I like the independent, like late 80s, early 90s stuff that, especially the shot on video stuff that just,
I've seen that.
So it was also adapted into a film called Bleeders, evidently also called Hemoglobin.
That's the one.
Do you remember the case for Bleeders in the video store? It was squishy. You could move the liquid
around.
Yes,
this is an alternate case, obviously, because that's it.
That's the one. It was that one, and Black Roses had the guitar that was pumped out, and you could press a button, and it would make a little guitar noise.
Those were the two
that I would always poke at.
There they are, the Bleeders.
That's one of the movies.
He's got 8 noses. So
that's one of the movies that you and I have talked about.
I finally watched it. I think you might have procured it for me.
I don't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, I know you and I have talked. I didn't know that was a Lurking Fear adaptation. So I got to add that to the list.
So I think we should jump into Hong Kong horror.
Let's
do it.
Which
one should we start with, Robert?
This is what we're here for.
Let's start with Mr. Vampire because Carrie will have the least on it.
Yes. I'll have more to say about the next two.
All right.
Mr. Vampire is great. It's a perfect movie, I think.
I've noticed a Hong Kong comedy is often there's some buffoon, just someone acting a fool throughout the movie, and they're the comedy factor.
The
and
jester.
This one has like 3 to 5.
Yeah, they're all buffoons. Like all of the people who work in the corpse house, I don't know what it's called, they're all just goofing around. Especially that opening scene where
those two students,
they're just flipping around over coffins, and then he thinks there's a vampire, but it's really just the other guy dressed up like a vampire. And then when he goes to buy the rice, there's a secondary buffoon that works in the rice store where he's like, I gave him 75 pounds of rice. And it just, there's so many good buffoons in this movie.
Yeah, this is loaded with incompetent clowns. There's the cop slash cousin who is sadistic and kind of looks like a Nazi, and he gets branded. There's all sorts of wackiness in this movie, but the action sequences, I would say, might be the strongest out of the three movies.
It's really great. Mm. It's so good. I mean, it's just, I mean, it is martial arts style action, but it's more acrobatics. And I think that's a side of the Hong Kong cinema that has these sort of feats of, you know, physical strength or whatever in them. We're, as especially as Western audiences, so used to that display being combat. I think Mr. Vampire, and there's fighting in it, but it sidesteps it to a degree because a lot of the physicality of this movie is the buffoons trying to avoid the vampires. Yeah. And there's the good bit with them breathing through the bamboo.
So good.
And you know, trying to hide. And so it's not what Western audiences are most used to of these, you know, all-out fights, whether they're the mm-hmm. Jackie Chan style sort of kind of comedic or the Sammo Hung choreography where people are really hitting hard or, mm-hmm. you know, it's more of an acrobatic display that isn't physical combat. And again, I don't want to undersell what physical combat there is in this movie because that's well done as well. But it's always funny to see a guy trying to get away from a monster in a fun and interesting way.
This also introduced so many... Well, first of all, I should say that I'm pretty unfamiliar with the folklore behind hopping vampires. But these are vampires like no others. It's definitely the only time I've seen a vampire movie where they can leave critical wounds by squeezing someone's arms really hard.
Yeah, because they have fingernails.
That's right. They all have these blue manicured long nails.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
They want your breath.
Ooh.
They're trying to get it.
I never heard that either. Just hold your breath.
Yeah, just hold your breath. But if it's an American vampire, mm-hmm. and there's, so this leads to the sub-genre of Hong Kong movies that feature American style or European vampires. There is Dr. Vampire. Dr. Vampire is great because it's about a doctor who gets bitten by a vampire, but he's more of a European style vampire. And he's slowly becoming a vampire, but he doesn't really realize it. And it's a movie that presents, if you get bitten by a vampire, it makes you want to wear a cape, which is amazing because the doctor's okay. walking by a store and he sees in the window a lot of coats, but one of them is a cape.
Just can't help himself.
And he is compelled to go into the store and buy this cape because he's becoming a Dracula.
Oh,
and then awesome. There's the, I think, 4 films in the Hello Dracula series. And I think one of the Hello Draculas has a European-style vampire in it as well. And then there's a movie where Sammo Hung dresses up like Dracula. And I can't remember which
what
one
is that?
Is.
Oh, okay.
I gotta figure it out. I probably should have made better notes. I didn't know we were going to get this deep into Western vampires. But
I love it. I'm learning so much about this subgenre.
If you can find it, and get in touch if you need help. There was one American hopping vampire movie made. It was called The Jitters.
What?
The Jitters.
And I showed that at Flickr a few years ago.
I vaguely remember this. I missed that screening though.
But yeah, The Jitters is an American hopping vampire movie, and it was early 90s, I think.
Okay.
It's really fun, and it was directed by John Fasano, who also directed Rock and Roll Nightmare.
Oh,
and we were just talking about it, Black Roses.
Yes.
So
it's great heavy metal horror from the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, I also noticed that Ricky Lau not only directed Mr. Vampire, but also 2, 3, 4, and Mr. Vampire 92.
Right. Mr. Vampire.
So he was in it. I mean, he was.
Yeah, he was a lifer. Yeah. Just like Lam Ching Ying, who played the Taoist priest.
What else do I know him from?
Anytime you've seen a Taoist priest in a Hong Kong movie,
that's him.
It's Lam Ching Ying.
He probably has hundreds of movie credits.
It's ridiculous. There's one movie that I saw that I can't even remember what it was, where the characters walk past a Taoist temple, and as they walk past, Lam Ching Ying, dressed as a priest, walks out just because it's so expected that he would be there because he's the priest for those temples. And so, and I mean, he's in Magic Cop, which is a great movie. If you haven't seen Magic Cop, really good.
I gotta see it.
And he's in, you know, obviously the Mr. Vampire series, but pretty much if there's a Taoist priest.
Okay.
That's him.
He looks familiar, even buried under this like stage makeup unibrow. I'm like, I've seen this guy somewhere.
Oh, I love the Buddhist priest unibrow. So, earlier, though I haven't seen Mr. Vampire, I think I was trying to make a connection between one of my absolute favorite Hong Kong films, Zoo, Warriors of Magic Mountain. Of course, you got Samo's in there as well. And I remember seeing it. Eureka put that out recently. It's great. If you've ever seen the movie, get that copy of it. It's wonderful. Blu-ray, not 4K. And there are hopping vampires in it. They're definitely hopping around. There's a lot of mysticism going on in it, but there's definitely that as well. So
they'll show up in a lot of stuff. I mean, obviously the folklore is ancient, they'll show up in movies. And I think a lot of Western audiences stumble in Hong Kong movies because they don't get the references, and they think that there needs to be a background in this stuff in order to appreciate it, but kind of not really. They're just monsters that hop around. And I don't want to be dismissive of a culture when I say that, but it's all you need to know for these movies. Yeah. If you really want to study Chinese folklore and monsters, I mean, I'm sure there's social and political and economic implications to how these things were created, and I'm sure it's very interesting. But also,
the movie's not going in.
Right. You can watch Mr. Vampire and just be like, look, that monster's trying to get him. And it's you'll get it.
That's perfect. That's why we watch these, you know.
I also wanted to check in the version of Mr. Vampire I watched, are there names of the two students of the priest, Harry and Dan?
Did you watch the dubbed version? The English dubbed version? Because it depends.
Okay.
In the English version, they have Western names. A lot of times I liked to watch the dubbed version because I think it's interesting to see exactly like that. Or if somebody buys something, they'll, you know, they're like, oh, I want to buy this rice. $5.
Yes.
You know, because it's like, well, that's what people who are going to hear this know. And I mean, until the mid to late 90s, every movie in Hong Kong was shot without sound. And then it was sent off to wherever it was going to go and dubbed either into Cantonese or Mandarin, or, you know, in some cases, if a movie made it, like Bewitched, which we'll talk about, if a movie made it to Southeast Asia, like Thailand or somewhere like that, then it would be dubbed into the language there. And so the fact that they were shot silently is almost like, a lot of people like to have these arguments about the intent of the filmmaker and whether watching a dub is superior to subtitles, but I don't think it matters. Mm. Especially with something like Mr. Vampire, it was shot silently. It's like a lot of Italian movies.
Wow.
They were shot with all of the actors speaking whatever language they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was sent to America, it was dubbed into English. Yeah. And when it played in Italy, it was dubbed into Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And so does intent really matter if the movie is made that way? A lot of times, though, the English dub is annoying. So it's my
problem. It's just the voices.
Especially if it's a white guy trying to do a stereotypical Asian accent, happens sometimes, but only sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And also a lot of fake British accents where they don't need to have a fake British accent.
There's a lot of that. I find the vocal, the dialogue acting to be usually better in the Cantonese or Mandarin transfer, which is normally what we get, Cantonese or Mandarin language versions, than the American versions. Maybe that's all it is for me. It's just
if there's a movie you know well and you want an advanced kind of experience with it, turn on the English dub and the translated subtitles and see how different they are. Because sometimes they're wildly different.
I recently got Righting Wrongs from Vinegar Syndrome, which has quickly become one of my favorite
It's great.
Action films. Yeah, it's what it's Yuen Biu breaking out, doing his thing.
I don't know it.
It's a really great action film. It's got Cynthia Rothrock in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just full of great action scenes. I can't say enough good about it. But so I've gone back and I've watched The Cantonese, The Mandarin. I've not watched the English dub. I think I'm going to try that next time. Yeah.
Well, the English dub on Righting Wrongs is also different because they made a different ending for the American cut, where someone who dies in the original does not die.
I'm
trying to sidestep that for Steph, but
right. I did watch some of the behind the scenes that go into that a little bit, and I did think that was fascinating. Steph, you got to watch it. I'll let you borrow my copy. It's amazing.
All right, I'm ready
really
to
good.
Go.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about Bewitched?
Yes.
Mm. All right.
Oh, can I say something really quick about it? So Carrie and I, one of our first episodes, we did a few Shaw Brothers horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
So one was 1975's Black Magic, which I researched it after we talked about it. I do not think there's anything in any Asian folklore about the rice vagina magic.
Yeah.
Remember we said, I wonder if this is based in anything. I don't think it is.
Nope.
And then we also watched The Boxer's Omen. And we're like, could there be anything more bonkers than this movie?
Oh, yeah. Because we were really, at that point, I don't know, but I think we were sort of in the same boat. I hadn't seen that much when you got into the 70s and 80s Hong Kong horror. We were not steeped in it at that point.
I never even heard the whole cat rating system then.
Right.
I'm psyched.
Yep.
It's kind of my new frontier. But yeah, we watched The Boxer's Omen. We were totally blown away. And we saw that it was a sequel to a movie called Bewitched. Robert, do you want to give us your hot take on Boxer's Omen?
And that was such an aside, too. Like, we had no idea. Yeah. We had no idea what we were in for, potentially, with Bewitched.
I think The Boxer's Omen is boring.
Controversial opinion.
It's just so much breaking of urns. Like the 30 minutes of the movie is concerned with the breaking of urns. And it's if I had to see one more shot of the inside of an urn, it's too urn heavy. And it's not a
could
bad
it be called
movie.
Between two urns.
It could. It at least two. Multiple urns. It's so weird because I like the movie. I really do like it. But I think if you've seen that movie and you've seen Bewitched, which I had seen both of them I think thanks to Video Library that we talked about, I had seen both of them in VHS times, whether through legitimate channels or not, I can't say. And so when these things started to get official releases, which I don't think Bewitched has gotten the boutique Blu-ray treatment yet.
No.
But I wondered, and still wonder now, why Boxer's Omen was chosen to be the flagship Shaw Brothers horror presented to Western audiences. Like you said, it's sequentially second.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as interesting a film as Bewitched, and that's no slight. I still think The Boxer's Omen is an interesting film, but I don't think it's as interesting as Bewitched. I think Bewitched moves faster. I think the varied setting between Hong Kong and Thailand, you know, back and forth like that, I think that's extremely interesting. I just think Bewitched is a stronger film than The Boxer's Omen, and I do think The Boxer's Omen really drags in the middle.
Mm.
And I don't think Bewitched does.
I never thought there was a second of The Boxer's Omen that dragged. But I do remember thinking it was hard to piece together a clear plot. And I will say Bewitched has one.
I'll agree with that. That may be for a couple of reasons. But yes, I was just getting into it. We were just getting into it. So anything, I think, at that point for me was really exciting. We were coming into this genre. I didn't really know this genre very well. So I love Boxer's Omen. I'll agree with you in this. I think there's some more bonkers things that happen in Boxer's Omen, but you're right. They happen near the beginning, near the end, here and there. Where I do, what I will say is Bewitched has a bunch of weird stuff happening throughout, just kind of throughout the whole thing. The pacing is good in it. But I think for me, Boxer's Omen is just, I think because I first saw it, you know, I saw it first.
I loved
it's
it.
So, it's so hard.
I've never
yeah.
seen anything like it. And I love Bewitched so much.
But let's get to, importantly, Bewitched is great. If you haven't seen it and...
No, they're both great. You should see both of them. Yes. I mean, there's no excuse for you not to. Well, there might be an excuse for you not to see Bewitched because it's hard to find.
What's available.
And
thank you, Steph, for giving me a copy.
If you want to see kind of the flip side of that, Kwei-Chi Hun made a straightforward martial arts film. It's either called Iron Dragon Strikes Back or The Gold Connection. It's a Bruce Lee. I can't remember which fake Bruce Lee is in it, but it's a Bruceploitation film. It's from 1979, so Bruce Lee had been dead for a few years when it was made. But it's great. There's a restored version of that. One of my favorite Blu-ray releasing labels called Gold Ninja Video from Canada. They put it out. They did a whole new scan of it. It's so much fun, and you can see sort of the building blocks. It's not a horror movie at all, but you can see the building blocks of the way Kwei-Chi Hun puts this stuff on film that kept showing up later and later when you get to the stuff from the early 80s, mm-hmm. you know, a few years after this Bruceploitation movie was made. And I mean, it might be something that he doesn't even remember making, because those fake Bruce Lee movies were just cranked out. Really, let's get this in the theater and make as much money as we can in a couple of weeks and then move on to the next thing.
But that's right.
There's something really special about this movie that I really like it. So.
Okay.
How would you describe the plot of Bewitched?
Sex tourism is bad.
Sex tourism is bad.
Yeah. That's the whole plot.
Good always trumps evil. Yep. Casual sex as well. The sex tourism, but also casual sex tourism.
Yeah, don't step out on your girlfriend, because that comes back to get him.
We saw that in Black Magic too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Infidelity will lead to death, dismemberment, melting.
Don't accept jewelry from strangers.
Mm.
I think might be.
Especially any little charm that holds something. I mean, if you don't learn it from Rosemary's Baby, surely you learn it from Bewitched.
There's a lot of fighting curses going on in Bewitched. There are a lot of good scenes, you know, the monk and
all the different curses.
The evil sorcerer, and it's just like curse fighting curse, sorcerer fighting monk.
I think about 40 minutes into Bewitched, 40, 45 minutes in, when he goes home from his sex vacation and he's sort of back in his day-to-day life, and all the bad stuff starts happening to him, and he goes to try to get the curse removed. It's, you can almost feel a physical sensation of like a roller coaster, like, okay, here we go. Like, it's been weird so far, because like the goo coming out of the amulet and the hair growing on his chest.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
There's been some weird stuff going on, but this, we go. And it just really kind of drops downhill.
It does not disappoint from that moment. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Shit definitely pops off right there.
Yeah, it does. I really enjoyed the green bat, the first scene of the little green bat where it kind of comes out.
Yeah, where the way it emerges, it's folded up and it just unfurls.
I almost expected him to say something just for a moment. I was wondering if they're going to...
He should have had a speaking role.
He deserved it.
I love how they can just say, this man is a bat, and we just accept that it's real until we see it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
He could be a whale. He's a bat.
Yeah, if you're looking to get into Hong Kong horror, you just go with it. Just let it take you on the ride.
There's a thing that a lot of movies did, well, not a lot, but some movies did in the early 80s, but a lot of them were either Hong Kong or Italian movies, where they put this thing over the camera that makes any light source have a rainbow around
yes.
it. And that is, I always love it when it happens. In a lot of Italian police movies and crime movies, you just see cars' headlights erupting it. But this one, I think it's used so well here, because there's scenes where you'll just have someone sitting cross-legged and they're only lit by two candles, and the candles have that rainbow kind of explosion coming off of them. Whatever that filter is, it's used so well in a lot of those shots, especially when the rituals are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just that explosion of kind of diffused rainbow light around all the stuff. I could look at that all day. That's good times.
Welcome to astigmatism.
I mean, but there's so the film's so colorful. The fashion's great. Like everything.
Oh yeah, The clothing in that movie.
The bell bottoms are on point, man.
Every shirt that guy wears where he's on his little sex trip.
I want all those shirts.
The first thing he does is like he strips on and he just puts on that linen shirt that with the really long space between the buttons. And,
yeah.
Pistachio Detective, he's got some pretty cool outfits. And his lady.
Yeah.
So good.
It's true.
It's just, it's great.
Oh, man. I also kind of thought of Italian horror, well, specifically horror, because it's kind of like some deranged Fulci. You get the same sludgy blood. Mm-hmm. You get like a lot of the same kind of DIY bug animal props.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite scenes, I know it's a pretty quick scene, is where he goes to find the dead pregnant lady.
Sticks the
stake right through the foot. It's a pretty subtle scene, actually. And she just slowly rises up.
And the way she rides, like that whole, just the mechanics of the way she kind of comes up after.
That scene was one of my favorite scenes actually in the film. I know it sounds strange, but yeah. And then she's just saying, and then you know, the blood starts coming out of the mouth. Anyway, I thought that scene was great.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. Very, very atmospheric.
You do start to notice some things that happen in a few of these movies. Maybe this is part of folklore that we don't know, but where you light up under some corpse's chin. That seems to be part of a lot of these rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
I wonder if driving a long nail into the top of the head was that specific to this film? I've not seen that in any other movie. But
I don't know if I have either.
Is that specific to this film, or is there some, like, oh, no, this is how you get rid of this particular kind of demon. You have to use a nail. And the, like, I don't
probably.
Know.
Like a nine-inch spike. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. There's so many things. There's so many rules in this film.
Like, there are a lot of rules.
I can't keep it all straight. So, yeah, likely, yes.
I just accept what every character says in these insane movies to just be scientific fact.
It's like, all you can
this,
do.
You have to do this. This is this curse. Yeah. This
to
is
do anything
curse.
Else, you would go mad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it kind of worked.
It totally did. But yeah, what a great ride. It was an absolute blast.
Does Bewitched have any official release for the U.S.?
Not that I know of. I don't think it does.
I searched around for this film a few weeks ago. Thought I'd found it on YouTube. It was not on YouTube. There are clips of it on YouTube, but you're not going to find the whole thing, and you're not going to find a whole lot. It's like a tiny trail of breadcrumbs that ends pretty quick. So no, for some reason it's gotten lost in, you know, the annals of cinema over time. And you bring a good point. Why?
Well,
you know, why wouldn't it be, you know?
It's interesting that you mentioned Italian horror, because Quaichi Hon also made a movie called Corpse Mania.
That sounds familiar. Okay.
A lot of people compare it to giallo movies. A lot of people say it looks like a Fulci movie, but it's and so I've seen it, and I think it's okay.
It's on a lot of best of lists, but I was going to ask you what your thought was, because I wondered, is this another must-see that maybe I missed?
I could have probably just watched it at the wrong time. I mean, I had fun with it.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of people.
It's on my Letterboxd watch list.
A lot of people like Corpse Mania.
Okay, so it's on there. I see it pop up in a lot of lists from people who are into Hong Kong horror, so yeah, I figured I'd check.
Well, one more thing on Bewitched, though. Robert or Carrie, do either of you have recommendations if someone just wants some insane action movie that also has a bunch of over-the-top mysticism? It's going to show you stuff you are not expecting, and it's really fun.
Action movie.
Well, we've talked about Seventh Curse.
We're about to.
I think that kind of...
Yeah, I think...
That's pretty close to, I think, what you're talking about, actually.
That kind of gets it. I mean, there's a lot of... Like, Sammo Hung, the spooky encounter movie...
I've never seen it.
Sammo Hung did. That's fun. But it depends on if by over the top you mean, like, goo and stuff coming out of people's mouths, or just, like, oddly... You know, like, what kind of stuff are you looking for?
I want to see something where... I cannot believe I'm watching these maggots right now.
It's all about the maggots. I think Zoo, I mean, you've probably seen Zoo. I would rewatch Zoo if you haven't watched in a while. Have you never
seen
Zoo?
Never
seen
Steph.
Zoo Warriors from the Magic Mountain.
That fits the bill right there. I mean, it's mysticism. There's action. He's got Sammo in it.
Yeah.
So there's good action. And isn't Yun in there as well?
Yeah. It's
two of the three brothers that are in there. It's, yeah, that's amazing. In fact, another copy. I got it.
That's where you should start. If you haven't seen that one, you start there.
I love it.
You got to come back for part two.
Yes.
We could. I mean, I could talk longer than you want to listen about Choi Hart.
Yeah. I
love him so
much. What a career. What a career he's had. Maybe that should be a director spotlight episode.
Oh, yeah. That would be actually really cool.
He's done a lot. I've only seen a handful of his movies. They're all great. Okay, so does that bring us to the final film of our episode here? Yeah.
Seventh Curse.
Someone please summarize this movie in a sentence or two.
I can't.
I don't know if I can summarize it, but Indiana Jones plus Demon Baby chewing on people's necks, plus Maggie Cheung playing Kate Capshaw.
She's so much more likable.
No. She does. She is. She's way better. But like, yeah, it's Indiana Jones plus horror. I don't know. That's just a
kind of alien.
There's a little alien in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's
it's a mishmash of. It feels like there's a lot of Western influence in Seventh Curse.
Yeah, and there's a lot of toddlers being mashed into a fine paste.
Yeah,
that was a thing.
The baby crusher.
I mean, they're
just a whole machine for it.
They're just like wheeling it up. Yep.
And then they just look like tomato soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does not look like baby blood, or the way I imagine baby blood looking.
And they're pretty happy about the work they're doing. They seem unbothered by it.
It's a living. Yeah. It's a Flintstones thing.
It's just how you do it.
I was trying to describe this the other day, and I think I'm going to say this guy goes into the jungle looking for a cure for AIDS. How he thought he was going to find that through binoculars is very odd, but instead he discovers this cult, and that's where we see the demon fetus worm creature.
Yes.
I don't even know what that thing is.
It is hard to describe it.
Yeah. I think that's also one of these, you just have to watch it to understand the demon baby creature.
Ugh.
Just got to see it. Yeah, yeah. It's right. It feels like a little Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely in there.
Particularly.
It is my favorite movie skeleton. I was trying to think of all the skeletons in movies that I love, and I believe this is the best one.
It's a great one. Not many movies, you know, that you're going to get. Well, okay, some of the things we love about Hong Kong horror, lots of pulling worms out of the stomach. We had that, which is always, you know, that's definitely something you see a lot. So they have some good horror tropes in there. I also love that this is the same director who did the story of Ricky, and you can definitely tell.
Mm-hmm.
He has done Love so Scoop. Many great movies, and I only know this because of you, Robert.
He did Peacock King. Peacock King is great because it's got a lot of stop motion, kind of dinosaur creatures. I mean, there's some stop motion dinosaurs at first, and then there's creatures later on. Peacock King is great. The Cat, which I think is still on Criterion Channel.
What's The Cat about?
It is about a cat that might not be a cat. I don't want to give too much away, but the cat is from outer space. But it's not called The Cat from Outer Space because that's a different movie. But it was in the Criterion Channel's collection of movies about cats.
And supposedly this is a trope for them. There's a subgenre of The Cat from Outer Space. Isn't it like there's a story?
I think so, yeah. But
there's more history to that, evidently. Yeah.
And this one ends, just like you would expect, with a lot of goo.
Yes.
So,
none of these movies have disappointed me in the goo amounts.
Mm-mm. I love Chow Yun-Fat. It is the most boring
I've ever seen him, though.
That's
right. I forgot a young Chow Yun-Fat.
A young Chow Yun-Fat doing nothing until the end where he's firing, you know, a couple of machine gun rounds. I was like, what? You would have never, I mean, apart from the fact that obviously he's a good-looking dude, you never would have thought he'd become the John Woo. Action,
right. You know, yeah.
John Woo's favorite.
The biggest gun.
Yeah.
He's just there.
Weren't we laughing? So Carrie and I saw this movie in 2019 with our friends Kate and Claude and Eric. Mm-hmm. And didn't he have like a silly like British name or something?
Something like that, yeah.
I have
to go back and look. I mean, according to the cast, it's Way, but there was another name in there. You brought this up earlier, Maggie Cheung. I love her in this movie. I love Maggie Cheung anyway.
Yeah, you
she's
get
amazing.
Two recognizable stars in this one.
You do. I mean, you can say she's a rich bimbo is the character they've created for her. Yet somehow she keeps pulling them out of bad spots.
Mm-hmm.
She shoots a machine gun, mows a bunch of guys down, saves the character. I mean, She's always just a little more cunning than you expect, even though she seems just like a total dimwit.
You can't keep her from the action.
No, she wants to be right there. What'd you think about it?
I think this movie is, it's just so much fun because it has these setups. Like the baby crushing machine, like the ridiculous, you know, the ridiculous machine gun thing. It just has these setups where a lot of times a movie will show something that you think is background or it's like, oh man, I wish I could have seen a little more of that. In this movie, it's like the director heard you and said, oh, did you want to see the baby crushing machine work? Okay, well, I'll show you how it works. Oh, did you want to see this big gun that this guy's holding? Did you want to see him shoot a bunch of stuff with it? Oh, okay, cool, we'll do that. And it's just like every little whim that you have when you're watching other movies, like, oh, I wish the guy in Star Wars that looks like an elephant, like, I wish I could see him do some more stuff. If that guy had been in Seventh Curse, you would have seen him do more stuff.
Yes. Like, yes. No, it's great. It's great. It's, yeah, it's somehow, it just kind of works on all the levels we talked about. I mean, it's a mishmash of films. It, you know, I would think it would be a seminal film from that era.
It's the only time guns have brought me so much joy in a movie. They keep not working, and then it's like, oh, you just needed a bigger gun.
I love when, like, their mission at one point is to go get a cow placenta and the blood of a black dog. You know, it's just all sorts of things happening. Yeah.
Again, it's rules. You know, there's very specific bulleted lists that you follow. And it just makes magic seem so achievable. Like, if you gather these ingredients in a specific order and do a specific thing with them, you will do the magic. Like, it will work.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like baking a cake.
Mm-hmm.
The students in Mr. Vampire, they were complete ding-dongs, and they were still doing magic all over the place.
Yeah, they were just magicking left and right until that guy, that other ding-dong, slipped them the wrong kind of rice.
All right, Robert. Well, where can people find you?
I am on the internet at theatomicelbow.bigcartel.com. That's where I sell my zines. I'm second period on the social media platform Instagram. I think I'm on Blue Sky and X, formerly known as Twitter, as Atomic Elbow.
What's your Letterboxd handle?
All over the place.
I think my Letterboxd, I think I'm the Atomic Elbow or just Atomic Elbow on Letterboxd.
Robert's Letterboxd is a treat.
If you look at my name, it just says Robert. So I don't know.
Atomic Elbow. I have not checked out your Letterboxd yet, but I need to, obviously. I'm going to do that, making the note right now. Thank you for all the recommendations too. I need some good recs, and that is great. So,
I'm excited about it. I can't wait to hear what you think about them.
A few I wrote down: Peacock King,
yes,
The Jitters, Magic Cop, Gold Connection, and I feel like I probably should see Corpse Mania just.
Yeah, because, you should probably see Corpse Mania.
You know, it's mentioned a lot. It's mentioned a lot.
Robert, what are you screening next at Flickr?
I am showing the 80s Donnie Yen movie Mismatched Couples. It was directed by Yuen Woo Ping. Mm. It was an early starring role for Donnie Yen.
Okay.
He breakdances a lot, and he really wants to have sex with his cousin.
What? Cool. I'm pro all of those things.
Yeah.
Donnie.
It's Donnie. Mostly just so I can show the Donnie Yen breakdancing movie. The cousin attraction is just a bonus, I guess. Mm. And it's Donnie a Hong Kong comedy from the 80s, so there's a lot of poop jokes. The poop joke for this one is some ne'er-do-well setting up a video camera in a bathroom so they can broadcast a feed of a guy taking a dump at a party. So everybody at the party will watch him poop.
That was high comedy at that time.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Just no higher comedy.
I'm going to YouTube Donnie Yen breakdancing immediately after we finish this.
You got to see it.
All right. Well, man, what a pleasure hanging out with you and talking movies. It was great. Yeah.
I flew by. I thought we've only been doing this for like 15 minutes.
Oh,
I know.
Thank you, Robert.
Let's do this again sometime. We come back on the podcast.
I'm ready right now. All right,
let's go. Let's do it. All
episode
right.
Episode 2.
Well, once again, thanks, everyone. Hopefully out there you are listening. Episode 2. We're actually going to do some more this year, y'all. We're just feeling wild right now, so.
I feel like I'm going to raise it. I think I said maybe 70% or something last time. There's an 80% chance that there'll be an episode 3.
I think so. If we could get 4, if we could even be, as Robert was talking about earlier with his zine, if we could even be quarterly or average out to be quarterly.
Wow.
What a feat.
Yeah,
what
knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. So again, thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.